Breaking news tonight. The U.S. has begun strikes on Syria. Nightly news begins now.
This is NBC Nightly News with Lester Holt.
And good evening. As we come on the air live in the Pacific time zone, there is breaking news. President Trump announcing a short time ago that he has ordered U.S. airstrikes on targets in Syria, and those strikes carried out with allies Britain and France are now underway. This in response to a deadly chemical weapons attack against civilians in Syria 1 week ago. The latest atrocity in the horrific civil war in Syria, now in its eighth year. We're still learning details of this airstrike. NBC's White House correspondent Kristen Welker is at the White House tonight with the very latest. Kristen, good evening.
Lester, good evening to you. President Trump called that chemical weapons attack in Syria the crimes of a monster as he announced precision airstrikes tonight. He stressed that this was done in coordination with U.S. allies, the U.K., as well as France, and he had very sharp words for Iran and Russia.
Assad's recent attack and today's response are the direct result of Russia's failure to keep that promise. Russia must decide if it will continue down this dark path or if it will join with civilized nations as a force for stability and peace. Hopefully, someday we'll get along with Russia and maybe even Iran, but maybe not.
The White House stressed that relevant congressional leaders were briefed before this action was taken. And a little bit of background to all of this. A few days before that chemical weapons attack in Syria, President Trump had expressed his desire to get out of Syria. Now this crisis pulling him back in. He's been debating with his national security team throughout the week about just how strong the U.S. response should be, which allies would be involved. We know that the president has been calling for a very robust response. Now, it was a year ago that the U.S. launched very targeted airstrikes against Syria in the wake of a chemical weapons attack. Then the president speaking in very personal, emotional terms about the images of children who were suffering. You heard him speak very emotionally again tonight. But the question that remains, Lester, at this hour, just how strong will this response be?
All right, Kristen, Lester. We're seeing the activity behind you, recognizing a late and busy night there at the White House. Thank you. We want to turn now to our chief foreign correspondent, Richard Engel, in Istanbul. Richard, what are you hearing from there?
So this is not what I had been expecting in conversations I've been having with U.S. officials. The U.S. is now engaged in an open-ended commitment in the Middle East. President Trump said that this is not just going to be a one-off attack, that the U.S. is prepared to sustain these attacks until Bashar al-Assad stops using chemical weapons. That is a much different mission. That is effectively a new war in the Middle East. Already, there are reports of explosions in Damascus, explosions in eastern Syria, and a short time ago, the Syrian state television broke into its programming to announce that the country's air defense systems have launched counterstrikes to confront what it called the U.S., French, and British aggression on Syria. So we will see if those counterstrikes are effective. The U.S. has been taking great pains to make sure that the pilots or missiles involved in this are protected. But there are significant risks because the Syrian government is not alone. It is backed by Russia. It is backed by Iran. Both countries have forces on the ground.
Yeah, let's pick up on that thought, Richard. They have a lot of air defense capability there. You also have Iranians and Russians there. A very risky battlefield, especially if some of these missions are being flown by manned aircraft.
The danger is also what happens next. I've been told by U.S. officials that there's a lot of coordination that has been happening, at least with the Russians, that the U.S. Pentagon does not want the Russians to become involved in this, that they've been communicating U.S. intentions very clearly to the Russians. I haven't heard as much coordination happening with the Iranians. Both countries have troops on the ground. But what happens if this continues? It's easy to communicate with the Russians and the Iranians, potentially the Iranians, about the first day of the strikes. But this, if this is, in fact, an open-ended campaign, then it has the potential effectively being a very slippery slope.
All right. Richard Engel in Turkey for us tonight. Thank you. Our other big story this evening, the war of words Washington has been bracing for months. The president leading a counterattack on fired FBI Director James Comey just hours after Comey began his much-anticipated book tour, describing the president as a congenital liar. The president firing back on Twitter, calling Comey an untruthful slimeball. And a warning, if there are small kids in the room, some of the language and descriptions only go down from there in Comey's telling of the Trump presidency. Our Hallie Jackson has details.
Tonight, battle mode and a coordinated Comey assault.
Comey will be forever known as a disgraced partisan hack.
This book should be on the fiction shelf.
It seems to me like he sounds like a disgruntled ex-employee.
President Trump today torching his fired FBI director as an untruthful slimeball after James Comey's scathing comments in a new book, painting the president as obsessed with disproving a dossier packed with salacious and unfounded rumors.
Honestly, never thought these words would come out of my mouth, but I don't know whether the current president of the United States was with prostitutes peeing on each other in Moscow in 2013. It's possible. But I don't know.
In the pointedly personal tell-all, Comey describes the Trump presidency as a forest fire. Still, Comey acknowledges he may not like Donald Trump's behavior, but it may fall short of being illegal. The book, coming after months of criticism from the White House.
He's been besmirched publicly. His professional judgments have been called into question. And I think this book largely represents a rebuttal to that, as opposed to some revelations or bombshells that have legal ramifications.
Comey's firing last year led to the appointment of a special counsel, something that frustrates and infuriates the president. Potentially critical context for his decision today to pardon Scooter Libby, Dick Cheney's former chief of staff. He was convicted after a different special prosecutor's investigation in 2007, an inquiry overseen by none other than James Comey, at the time the deputy attorney general.
I have given a great deal of thought to this in recent days.
Libby was found guilty of obstructing justice and of lying to the FBI during an investigation into who leaked the name of undercover CIA operative Valerie Plame.
What message do you believe Donald Trump is trying to send by pardoning Scooter Libby?
This is definitely not about me. It's very clear that this is a message he is sending that you can commit crimes against national security and you will be pardoned.
The White House tonight dismissing critics who question if the president is signaling something to those wrapped up in the Russia investigation now.
One thing has nothing to do with the other, and every case should be reviewed on their own merits.
The president's critics worry he's so upset with that special counsel investigation that he may try to put a check on it by firing Rod Rosenstein, the deputy attorney general. That has not happened yet, but NBC News tonight has learned from three people who have spoken with Rosenstein that he is at peace with that possibility. Lester.
Hallie Jackson at the White House. Thank you. As all that plays out, we're also learning a lot more tonight about the FBI raid on President Trump's personal lawyer, Michael Cohen. The feds say he's under criminal investigation. The new details revealed as Cohen fights in court to keep investigators from sifting through the trove of information they seized. We get the latest from NBC's Peter Alexander.
Tonight, new revelations that the president's personal lawyer, Michael Cohen's been under criminal investigation for months, with federal prosecutors zeroing in on Cohen's personal business dealings, explaining that dramatic FBI raid at Cohen's offices. Prosecutors state the crimes being investigated involve acts of concealment. Cohen's asking a federal judge to block the FBI from reviewing seized records that date back years, some related to hush money payments to two women, a porn star and a playmate, who said they had affairs with Mr. Trump. Stormy Daniels, lawyer.
I think there's no question that there's documentation in those records concerning the negotiation with my client.
Agents, the filing says, have already searched multiple email accounts belonging to Cohen, but not a single email, they add, was exchanged with President Trump. The White House today deflecting when asked if Cohen still represents the president.
I'm not sure, Jill. I'd have to check.
But tonight, the New York Times reports President Trump called Cohen today to check in.
Even if the call was harmless, the appearance it gives is not good for anyone involved.
Also tonight, top Republican fundraiser Elliot Broidy says Cohen negotiated a settlement, reportedly worth $1.6 million, with a former Playboy playmate who claims she became pregnant as a result of a consensual affair. Today, Broidy resigned his post at the RNC. Peter Alexander, NBC News, the White House.
Millions are on alert for severe storms across the South, and already an apparent tornado touched down in Mountain Burg, Arkansas, near the Oklahoma border. There are reports of damage, including near an elementary school, and reports of people who were trapped in their homes. Cities under threat from this system include Little Rock, Shreveport, Dallas, Memphis, Kansas City, and Des Moines. Meantime, there are blizzard warnings from Colorado to Minnesota, even as temperatures soar across much of the East. Tonight, new body camera footage shows the police encounter with a woman who opened fire at YouTube, shooting three and injuring more before taking her own life. Just hours before the shooting, police in Northern California found her sleeping in a car after her family reported her missing. In the chilling exchange, police asked the shooter why she's in the area and if she is a threat. NBC News national correspondent Miguel Almaguer has the video.
Police found Nasim Agdam asleep in her car at 1:38 a.m., hundreds of miles from home, the day of the shooting.
Are you ever planning on going back home? No? Okay, fair enough. Do you have any friends or anybody out here? No?
Officers discovering the 38-year-old had been reported missing by family.
You don't want to hurt yourself, do you? Or you don't want to hurt anybody else? You don't want to commit suicide or anything like that, right? Okay.
The parking lot encounter came 30 miles away from YouTube, where Ogden opened fire 11 hours later.
We have a report of subject with a gun.
Ogden seriously wounded three employees, then took her own life. The shooter's family says the prolific YouTube user lost her income after the company changed how it pays its users.
Why Mountain View? I mean, I know it's a great city and everything, but... Oh, okay.
The suspect's family says they told authorities Ogden could be a threat.
The parents warned police, be careful.
Police say they followed up, and her father never said she was dangerous.
Is there anything you wanted to tell your parents? Okay.
Hours later, gunfire erupted. Miguel Almaguer, NBC News.
An alert tonight as many Americans are sitting down at the dinner table. The CDC warns that an outbreak of E. coli has been linked to chopped romaine lettuce. At least 35 cases in 11 states. It has not been narrowed down to a single brand or store, so the CDC is telling all consumers across the U.S. who have store-bought chopped romaine lettuce at home to throw it out. Now to a story about delayed justice and a TV star on a mission. For years, we've been reporting on women who were sexually assaulted and took steps to provide evidence of a crime, but then nothing happened. Now a new HBO documentary is shining light on the nationwide problem, produced by Law & Order SVU actress Mariska Hargitay, who's no longer just a fictional crime fighter. Here's our senior national correspondent, Kate Snow.
You have the right to keep your mouth shut.
When Mariska Hargitay started on Law & Order SVU, letters flooded in, women revealing their stories of assault and abuse.
To me, an actress, just a person, not an expert, not anything. And I just remember thinking, I need to respond.
She became an advocate and met Kim Worthy, the lead prosecutor from Detroit. Their film, I Am Evidence, premiering Monday on HBO.
And I can't understand what was so unimportant about me.
The film follows the journeys of women who reported sexual assaults and provided DNA evidence called a rape kit, but then discovered that evidence was never tested.
To learn that these women who had been through this horrible trauma would have the courage to come forward and then to be ignored. And I just couldn't believe that this was happening in America.
We first reported on Detroit in 2013 after a prosecutor in Kim Worthy's office discovered police had set aside 11,000 untested kits in this dingy warehouse.
In Detroit, what they were doing, they were making a determination that the woman was not believable, that her story didn't make sense.
After years of painstaking work, this year they sent the last batch of the 11,000 to be tested. They've already identified 850 serial rapists.
I mean, we had no money. We had people that didn't want to help at first. And there was no one that was going to stop me from trying to solve this issue. And that's how you have to be.
That's why she's my hero.
In 2015, the U.S. Department of Justice estimated there are still 400,000 untested rape kits sitting on shelves.
The bottom line, testing rape kits just sends a fundamental message to survivors that you matter, your case matters. And
we believe you.
And we believe you. And not testing them says we don't.
Testing kits does cost money, but Hargitay and Worthy want every one of them tested. Kate Snow, NBC News, New York.
So ahead tonight, caffeine crackdown, the FDA warning of a significant public health threat linked to multiple deaths. And caught on camera, the daring rescue after a vehicle plunges right off a cliff. We're back now with a new warning about those popular dietary caffeine supplements that are sold on the internet and have been linked to several deaths. Experts say just a single teaspoon can deliver a lethal dose of caffeine. Now the FDA is banning bulk quantities of pure liquid and powder caffeine. NBC's Tom Costello has the new alert that families should hear.
It almost looks like powdered sugar, a pure form of caffeine usually sold over the internet as dietary supplements meant to deliver a quick jolt of energy. But too much can cause erratic heartbeats, seizures, and cardiac arrest. In 2014, two young men died after overdosing on pure caffeine, including high school senior Logan Steiner, who was cramming for finals.
This is a dangerous, dangerous product. And it's not a matter of if it will kill, it's when.
A single teaspoon can contain 3,200 milligrams of caffeine, equal to 28 cups of coffee. Cardiologist Dr. Alan Taylor.
It's like cocaine. It's a hyperstimulation, and the heart muscle cells can't respond to it. And it can actually cause acute heart failure and death.
Today, the FDA banned bulk shipments of pure caffeine in powder and liquid form.
1/8 of a teaspoon instead of 1/16 of a teaspoon, that can make a difference in somebody's health. And that's a margin for error that we're just not prepared to allow.
The dietary supplement industry today applauded the FDA ban, insisting consumers have access to products manufactured with safe amounts of caffeine. Importantly, the FDA is not banning energy drinks or other caffeine products, and doctors say too much caffeine from any source could still pose a health risk. Tom Costello, NBC News, Washington.
Still to come this evening, the latest on Will Ferrell after the comedian was involved in a scary crash. And meet the country's newest mega millionaire, the winner of that massive $533 million jackpot, finally revealed. A big scare for actor Will Ferrell on a Southern California freeway. Ferrell, a passenger in an SUV limo, when it was apparently swiped by another vehicle that veered into its lane, causing Ferrell's limo to hit the center divider and overturn. Ferrell was not seriously hurt, but authorities say others in the SUV were injured. The crash remains under investigation. A daring rescue caught on camera in California today. Police say a driver lost control of a minivan, plunging some 150 feet off a cliff into the Pacific Ocean along Highway 1 south of San Francisco. The driver miraculously has survived as waves crashed around the wreckage of his vehicle. A rescuer brought him up to safety. And we now know who won last month's $533 million Mega Millions jackpot. Richard Wall of Vernon, New Jersey, came forward today to claim his prize. Wall says he and his wife are in disbelief, reviewing the winning ticket 15 times before putting it in a fireproof safe. He said he's only played the lottery twice in his life. That's a lucky man. When we come back, visiting the cool new museum where the main exhibit is you. Finally, tonight, millions of them are uploaded to social media every single day. So it was only a matter of time before an entire museum was dedicated to the fine art of the selfie. NBC's Jolene Kent takes us there for the perfect shot.
From Miami Beach to Times Square to the royal sights of London, selfies are inescapable, blocking sidewalks and flooding social media. Now selfies have a museum of their own.
Is the selfie really art?
Actually, I love how even this question, how controversial it is.
In Los Angeles, Tahir Mamadov and Tommy Houghton built this museum to transform the way we think about turning the camera on ourselves. It may seem a little too soon, but with nearly 70% of adults admitting to snapping a selfie or two, the question isn't why, it's why not.
since the dawn of photography, that's one of the first things people took a photo of was a human being.
The first selfie on record was taken by camera pioneer Robert Cornelius back in 1839. But Paris Hilton claims she invented the selfie with this 2006 snap with Britney Spears. And these days, even the Pope stops to capture the moment.
Now everyone can be an artist.
Inside the museum, visitors revisit some of the classics, selfies with food, in the car, and yes, even the infamous bathroom mirror selfie.
I can't see myself.
There is no reflection.
Why is there no reflection?
We wanted to play around with the idea of that's what made a bathroom selfie work, was the reflection. And by removing it, you make people question, oh, wait.
A reflection of how we really see ourselves, up close and personal. Jolene Kent, NBC News, Los Angeles.
Yeah, I fondly remember that shot, the night of my first nightly news broadcast. We appreciate you spending part of your evening with us. That is Nightly News for this Friday night. Jose Diaz-Balart will be here tomorrow night. I'm Lester Holt. For all of us at NBC News, thank you for watching and good night.